for like the fun.
Okay. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for coming. Thank you. First, so, first lecture, we have seen, we have studied this property of sharp holography, so it's a miracle that some field theories are dual to a field theory or a gravitational theory in one higher dimension. And so we conjectured that this strange property that some conformal field theories have, it's just a simple consequence, or is a consequence of two basic properties, or two much simpler properties. The fact that the field theory has a large n expansion, that you can distinguish some subset of operators whose correlation functions factorize, so the disconnected parts are dominate the connected parts. And another property, which is a very large gap in the spectrum of dimensions. So almost all operators get a parametrically large dimension. So with these two properties, we conjecture that sharp holography is a consequence. But the way we saw this yesterday was really by writing all the constraints of the CFT and then matching solutions to the crossing equation with both interactions, with both local interactions. So you see, we explored all the possible consistent set of four-point functions that the CFT can have with that spectrum and satisfying the constraints of the CFT. And then we checked that that counting, that the number of solutions was exactly the same as the number of local bulk interactions. But the question I want to answer today is there a direct way to prove, if I give you a four-point function, how can I prove directly that this theory has sharp holography? Okay? So, you see that essentially that really reflects face limit. So you have to, if the theory has sharp holography, then you're able to take the flat space limit. So that's more or less what we're going to see today. I'll explain that in detail. So, okay, but this, I think this I'll do it like in rather quickly in less than an hour. So I want to start this today because I have a lot to say about my energy. Okay, these are just some basic formulas that we saw yesterday and I'm going to use again today. So before I start, does anyone have questions about yesterday's lecture? No? Okay, let's start. Let's study the flat space limit. So, what's the idea here? First of all, as I already said, to have this limit, this requires sharp holography. Without sharp holography, it doesn't make sense to take this. So, this is pretty clear. I mean, if you have, you really need to have both L string and L Planck much smaller than R so that you can take the flat space limit R going to infinity. I mean, these are dynamical scales that are fixing these are length scales that tell you really intrinsic properties of the dynamics. So if you want to take the flat space limit, you want to be able to decouple these two scales, the radius of ABS that you go to flat space and this dynamical scale.
Why doesn't have a flat space?
Because
that was an example that wouldn't have the sharp
spots. Yes, yes. If it has, at least, yes, it doesn't. It's true, it doesn't have. People don't know, the theory only exists in ABS4. You cannot write the higher spin theory that in flat space. You cannot take the flat space. It's inconsistent. Yeah.
Good. So let me another question, another way to put this question more pragmatically is, can we recover the flat space S matrix from the CFT correlation? Okay. So I think that's an important question. So I'll write it down. Okay. By flat space, I mean the ball theory in flat space. We're always thinking about scattering in the ball. So, my answer to this question is yes, we can. Okay. So, really, I'm going to give you an explicit prescription to get the 2-2-2 scattering matrix, S matrix element. From the 4-point function. Okay, so the fact that ADS CFT provides a non-perturbative definition of string theory, I think it's really a fact. You can just take the flat limit and recover the S matrix elements of the theory in the box, even in flat. So, I think it's good to start with bold statements. Good. So then let's see how this works.
Can I ask? You should. I guess I got a lot, or I'm not quite sure. You're going to take a particular flat space limit, and you're trying to recover semi-classical gravity? Is that the idea? Because I guess what's running around in my mind is I know how to do string theory in flat space. So why do I sort of have to take the string scale to zero?
You know how to do perturbative string theory.
Yeah. Well, I thought taking all Planck to zero, basically what you wanted is to.
But I'm taking L Planck to zero. I said L Planck has to be much smaller than R, and you can take R to infinity. But L Planck can be still finite.
So they're
relative
finite
to the frequency of your scattering,
okay,
to the wavelength of your scattering.
Just, okay. No, I understand. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Okay. So how should we do that? So the idea is to do a scattering experiment in here. Okay. We go back to this picture that I drew in the beginning, and we think of ourselves like this experimentalist that has this magic ball and can interact with it, prepare some forces, and then read off some detectors. And so I draw here the feature that I want to consider. So this is your ADS coordinates, and I'm saying that what we're going to do is we prepare some sources at the boundary, such that the wave packets that are produced by these sources are very narrow wave packets that focus in a point or in a small region in ADS. Okay? So let me put some equations to this. So what I'm saying is that if I take each of these wave functions, element with I, L4, and let me use W for coordinate in ADS, I'm just saying that I can prepare these wave packets from the boundary. Could they let me use y coordinates for the boundary because I'll need x. So y is in the boundary of ADS. Okay? I put some source in the boundary and I integrate it against the bulk to boundary property. So this is the all the boundary property.
Why you call it scattering? Why you call it scattering and not correlation?
So that depends on the interpretation. Okay. So as this
except what we are doing in the CFT is simply taking an integral of a four-point function. Okay, so you're integrating your four-point function over y with some sources, right? So you have here your four-point function. And you're integrating with some sources. Okay. This is what we're doing in the CFT. But now I want to think what's happening in the ball.
This is what I meant. This would be non-normalizable. So I wouldn't call it that.
No, it's non-normalizable because you have this source here, it grows here.
Yeah, but
if you take, for example, this time slice here, then you have two normalizable packets that are just approaching each other. You just prepare them from the boundary, but then they are normal. Anyway, so let's think what's happening in the ball. So first, this is the wave function, so the wave packets that are your external states in ABS. And now I'm going to say that I'm going to choose some properties for these wave packets, right? I want them to be narrow and focused at a point so that they intersect. So let me write that. So I want this wave packet in this region. Let me call that region the region where the coordinates omega w are much smaller than r. Okay, suppose you take some tangent space to ABS around this center point, and you take just a small region around that, much smaller than the range of the region, okay? So that you can do flat space evolution of the wave packet in that region. So I'm saying that in this region, I want this to be like a plane wave, modulated with some slow wave packet. Okay? Okay, so plane wave, and this is a wave packet that that gives a width, an envelope function to this wave packet. And for consistency for what I'm doing, I want to require that the width of this wave packet be much smaller than the radius of ABS, so that essentially all scattered atoms in flat space. And I'm also going to demand that the width of the wave packet be much larger than the wavelength. Okay, I say one over the energy of this of the sound. Okay. So that's it. I'm not going to show you explicitly how you can choose sources that give rise to wave packets of this source. That's just, I mean, you can just do the computation. It's nothing very deep. You can even take sources with compact support. They will do the job. But now the point is that we want, what happens when we consider scattering of these wave packets in the ball? Notice that now these wave packets only interact in a flat region. So you can just use your intuition from flat space. There's nothing, ABS is not important. Okay? Another thing that I want to impose is, of course, momentum conservation. Okay? I choose wave packets so that the momentum is conserved, so that they can have a non-zero. So then I think it's pretty clear that the interaction of these wave packets has to give just the flat space S matrix times the volume of the interaction region. Just the product over the intersection of these envelope functions. Okay? In the flat space. This is the basic equation, so if it was not clear, please.
Okay, back to boundary, okay?
No, the volume. But the idea, so
if you want to compute this correlation function using ADS, you have to use both of under propagators and then contract, say, with the full amputated Green's function in ADS. Okay? Now I'm saying, first do the integrals over the sources. That will give you this size integrated against the full amputated. So this is really the scattering process in the box. Right.
Not the capital F, not the little F. Yeah. The little, capital F is much better. If you want to write it, you can use the little F. You really need to do the property.
I'm just looking at this picture. Is the interaction part a little thing?
Yes, but I'm saying that the propagation was already incorporated. Psi is already propagated from the source to a point in the ball. So that part of the this part of the what I'm saying is that the full amplitude, this full thing, is equal to this. Okay, I'm saying this is equal to this. Okay? So now don't do the integrating over these interaction points in the ball. Okay. D W Y. Okay? Now just commute these Y's with these W's. When you integrate just the Y's, you get wave functions integrated with the Green function inside. And that's what I'm saying, that just by you can think in flat space, because the only interaction that is happening is in a region that is flat space. Okay. Okay, so this is the basic equation. And now you see this equation, I should say, so this equation was first written by Polchinski in 1999. And also Suskin the same in the plane, I think, at a very similar construction. So this is the property of sharp holographies. If you have sharp holographies, you have your four-point function that is satisfy this. And you see this is really telling you that if you change your sources so that the X don't intersect, so that they are not actually focusing that in the same point. Then you get zero, because there's zero from here, there's no interaction region. Okay? So this is highly sensitive to the form of the F. I can have the same F, and I just change a bit the function, the source, that changes the orientation of the wave packet, and I just get zero there. So you see you have an integral of a four-point function against sources, which is highly sensitive to the form of the source. So this is just telling you that you're doing the integral on top of a singularity. So what in the flat space limit in this integral, you're exploring this four-point function in a singular point. And you can see here what's the singular point. You see, the natural thing to do is to prepare it like this. You take, like, for example, two sources in opposite points on the sphere at constant time. And then a global time interval equals to pi later, you put your detector, say, rotated by an angle theta. This is like the top view, okay? This is top view of ADS. So you have your sources down there, and then one pi later, you measure them at an angle theta. This is really what we do in LHC or in any detector. Send particles one against the other, and then you monitor them at an angle. So and now, if you compute the cross ratios for these values, if you compute the cross ratios for the position that I'm saying here for the four sources, you get the following position. You get that z is equal to z bar. Okay. So this basic equation implies that A has a singularity
for z equals to 1.
So you see, this is just a process. I'm not showing you how to actually relate the sources with wave packets and then how to decompose this integral. But you can see that in the paper if you're interested. What you have to do is really, you assume a form, a singular form for A at z equals z bar, at this particular point that you're probing, and you replace it here, and you recover the correct relation between the source and the x given by this relation. So let's be more specific there. Another thing that you can do if you actually compute the cross ratios, if I show you a computer to compute the cross ratios for this configuration, is to see that in fact this cross ratio is given by sine squared theta over 2, where theta is the scattering angle as measured in that picture. Okay. You choose that configuration at an angle, you measure z and z bar by those formulas, and you just get z equals z bar equals sine squared theta. So to tell you more in detail what's the form of this singularity, let me introduce a parameterization of this cross ratio like this. So z and z bar are sigma times e to the rho and e to the minus rho. So I'll parameterize z and z bar by sigma and rho. Okay. So what I'm saying is that the four-point function, the reduced four-point function, has a singularity at rho equals zero. Okay, so it grows like rho. Okay, let me write it now. And of course, it has a residue, which is a function of sigma, which is just to be the common value in the limit of rho going to zero. So now I need to tell you, well, how do I know this singularity, this strength of the singularity? So for that, what you have to do is to this k that fits in the strength of the singularity is essentially fixed by the dimensionality of the coupling constant in ABS of the process you're studying. So let me say. So suppose you have this process here in ABS, and you have a coupling constant G squared multiplying this process. Okay. For now, think three level. Okay. You have some, either a contact interaction or some exchange, but the full process will become multiplied by a coupling constant. So that means the amplitude is going to be multiplied by a coupling constant. But the coupling constant can be dimensionful, right? It depends what kind of process you consider. So A is dimensionless, so you have to compensate here with powers of R, which I don't remember in my notation. Depends on the dimension. Okay, so you can read off the length dimensions of G or the mass dimensions of G from this power of R, because this combination has to be dimensionless. And what I'm saying is that this k fits this dimension of the coupling constant fixes the strength of the singularity. So if you have let me just give an example. One example that we saw yesterday. So if you have an interaction term like a quartic contact interaction like this with derivatives, okay? So when k is large, it's highly non-normalizable, you have a bigger dimension. Here in D squared. This k, I mean, I wrote it in a way so that k gives the right dimension. Okay? So now we just need the last step. So now you can see the last part of the formula is now you plug in this singularity, this form of the singularity, in this four-point function. You do these integrals, and you get a relation between the residue function and this Chaffee-Grahm in flat space. Okay. So let me write that through. Sigma, you should think of it as the scattering angle, which you can also write as minus P over S in terms of the Mendelssohn variance. Okay, so I didn't show you the details of the weight packets because I think that's not very illuminating, but I think that I stated the results precisely. So. Any questions on that? You have this scattering experiment that implies that an integral of the four-point function is highly sensitive to changes in the sources. That implies that you have a singularity at that point of probing. You propose an ansatz for the singularity that actually solves this explicitly, and you relate the residue of the singularity with the flat space with the flat space. K is just a parameter that is fixed by the dimensions of the coupling constant in ABS. You see, this combination has to be dimensionless because A is a dimensionless term. So, for example, this example, K is just that power of the
derivative. What is the singularity structure of A in general? Is it what there is? Or?
Sorry?
What is the singularity? What are the singularities of A in general?
Good question. So, so in general, you have in the Euclidean regime. Z and Z bar, so if you take Euclidean points, Z and Z bar is a complex conjugate of each other. Mm-hmm. And then if you keep that, Z and Z bar complex conjugate, the only singularities are the OPE limits. So when you take points together, 1 to 2 here in the 4-point function. So that means that essentially you only have singularities at zero. In the z-plane, D or D bar, at 0, 1, and infinity. Mm-hmm. So, moreover, if you just take z equals z bar in this Euclidean regime, that just means that you're taking 4 collinear points in Euclidean space. Okay? And that's not singular. This is an intrinsically Lorentzian singularity. You see this? You have to do an analytic continuation. Suppose you start in your Euclidean regime, you have say Z and Z bar complex conjugate. Okay. So now if you just bring them equal and real, right? Because if they are complex conjugate, then equal and real. It just means that you have the 4 points collinear and it's not singular. However, if you go through the weak rotation that takes you from Euclidean to that Lorentzian configuration of the points, notice that there you need to have essentially something like this. X1 and X2 are here, space-like related. Both in here for
X3 and X4 space-like. But then all the other relations are time-like. Okay? So this is really, all these relations are time-like. So as I was saying, if you do this analytic continuation, this weak rotation, that takes the from Euclidean to this configuration.
To take A and make it Lorentzian?
There's a unique way up to deformations that are irrelevant. Yeah, without, I mean, there's a unique way in terms of monodromies around this singular point.
What do they mean?
I mean that. Let me tell you the unique way. Okay. If you do it, so this one goes like this, and this one goes like this. And they become equal, but following different paths without being complex on here. Okay? So of course, you can do it different, and this path will be slightly twisted. But the point is that it has to go around this zero and meet here, and this one has to go around one. Okay? The point is this monology. That's the only invariant thing. Monology around the singular point. So this is, and this is the line of scattering of flat, of the flat, of the physical scattering in flat space. So you see, it's a sine square, so it's between 0 and 1. So physically, you have to have z and z1 meeting here in this line. That's the line here.
But the singularity is still 0, 1, infinity.
Yes, but when you do this analytic continuation, there's a new singularity where these cross ratios come together after continuing. These are singularities that you can keep z bar fixed and move z, and you will have this singular point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if you draw the Lorentzian one, is it?
Another question?
Sure.
Can you use it to get new information about the more interesting regime, which is not supergravity in justice?
Yeah, I've been trying to extend this with Takuya, and I'll talk about that later, okay? Ask me again if I don't answer it for me.
Supergravity in that space is not okay. No. You know how to do that.
This is only about the task.
You study anywhere, but I guess the point is that those things make you more. One is weakly coupled and the other is interesting.
I had a small question.
Sure.
Yeah, so this seems to be, your analysis seems to be based on the fact that you know the structure of the whole point function.
You mean the conformal invariance, that it's just a function of the
function. So is there any way to extend it to say n to n CI things?
I'm also going to comment on that. Yes, that's also something important, that if you have an endpoint correlation function, you have more cross ratios, but you also have more Mendelssohn invariance, what's the limit that you should take that? Yeah, that's something. I'll say a bit more about it.
One more question.
Sure.
Maybe the answer is trivial, but the unitarity constraints and the S-metrics, that space, because that is the imaginary part of it. Can you detect that and explain on the 4.1?
That's an extremely interesting question. I think we should be doing S-matrix theory for CFT here. So the same property, I mean, in our, the main idea of these lectures is that correlation functions of the CFT are conceptually really the scattering, the S-matrix elements of the bulk theory. So, and we know all these properties that you say that S matrix elements have to have. So they have to have discontinuity. The non-analyticities have to come from physical thresholds, and we have all these recursion relations and lots of interesting structures. I think the same thing should be true for correlators, CFT correlators. But that's something I'm thinking about. It's not an easy question.
Good. Let me just say that, so in the paper we did explicit examples where you can compute this four-point function in supergravity explicitly, like a closed form with like logs and d-logs of function of the cross ratio. And we did this procedure of the energy compensation very explicit and everything maxed. Even we did also graviton exchange. If you do it explicitly, it just works. So now, before ending this part, I just want to connect this with what we did yesterday. So yesterday we were studying partial waves, partial wave expansion. Yes.
Is plane waves are not seen on R in the flat space?
Plane wave?
Okay, maybe I'll start.
Yes. So let me write one equation that we derived yesterday, which was that this A1, this partial wave expansion of the four-point function, so you had a sum over n and l, and in the end we got this result that it was a total derivative with respect to the dimension of the zero order coefficients times the normal dimension times the partial wave function. First, just a comment. Here I'm writing in terms of 1 over z and 1 over z bar. So this is very easy to do. Yesterday we were doing in terms of z and z bar. But just by using these invariances of the four-point function when you exchange points, you can derive this formula directly. But this is better for what we want to study because now I want to recover the partial wave expansion in flat space. Okay? And the usual partial wave expansion in flat space is when you build partial wave, when you take the two initial particles and make an eigenstate of the angular momentum. So that's your partial wave analysis. How this eigenstate evolves, two particle eigenstate of the angular momentum evolves. So that in CFT corresponds to the channel when x1 goes to x2. Okay? And if you see here, or sorry, y now. If y1 goes to y2, that just means z and z bar going to infinity. So z equals infinity is the channel that corresponds to the S channel. And that's why I'm expanding around z equals infinity, writing this partial. So now the thing that I want to tell you, I'm claiming that this guy has a singularity which is quite strong. In particular for IK is quite strong at z equals z bar. So we have this sum. So you can ask, is this singular at z equals z bar? And the answer is, in d equals 2, it's not. In d equals 4, it goes like 1 over rho. Okay. It's not singular enough. This function has a much, even in d equals 4, it's singular, but it's a very weak singularity. So what has to happen is that this sum has to have a stronger singularity than each term. Okay. So to derive the singularity of the sum, really what you have to do is just to study the large n behavior of the sum. Remember that L we could stop at some capital L. It's not that large, it's not large L that is giving you this, it's large n. So what you should do is to take rho to zero, keeping n times rho fixed. Okay? If you do this limit, then this partial wave goes like e to the minus, okay, I'm just parameterizing. Why am I using this? This goes like e to the minus I n rho tends t over 2 e l of t. So again, I'm introducing theta because it simplifies, but you only have sigma and rho. Sigma is directly related to sine square theta. Okay? But the point is that you have this functional form, this exponential, in rho, but then you have here the partial wave function in plus space. These are just the Lagrange polynomial. It depends on the dimension. This is just the partial wave in plus space. And now to recover the right singularity, you see, you need this integral to have a specific large n behavior. Right? It's the large n behavior of this sum that gives you the strength of singularity at root of zero. So that in fact, demanding that you have the right singularity over there, you get that the gamma, this anomalous dimension function, grow like the power of n. So a fixed L, large n, 2k plus e minus 2. Large n. Okay? So, and then when you do the sum, you recover the partial wave expansion of the flat space as matrix. So what I'm saying is that the flat space limit also works in the partial wave analysis. You take the conformal partial wave expansion of your Fourier function, you take the flat space limit. In order to recover the singularity to 1, you discover that your anomalous dimensions have to grow with a given power of n of the dimension of the original level trace. And these coefficients at each fixed L that in front of the living behavior are just the coefficients of the partial wave expansion. Yes.
For which theory is this behavior satisfied?
This, okay, here I'm following the example I was doing yesterday, where I just have the Bartik interactions with the, so this k, this quartic k is the number of derivatives in the quartic interaction, right? It's like in that example. Number of derivatives divided by 2. In quartic vertex.
So this equation is that a generic behavior?
But this, I mean, I believe this is generic. I just did this explicitly in terms of partial waves in this example. But I don't see any reason it should hold in any case. The large n behavior of the anomalous dimension is fixed by again the dimensionality of the coupling, I guess. So if you have, it's all in this story. You have an interaction in DS multiplied by G squared, that has some dimensions. It fixes both the strength of the singularity in rho and the large n behavior of the anomalous dimension in n.
The gamma is the anomalous dimension of a double trace
of double trace.
Over it. So can I think of it as a prediction for the anomalous dimension?
Yes.
So is this a case in which you have that zero symmetry, or you
here I have, but it doesn't change. It doesn't change because the zero symmetry, if you include O, it changes itself.
Yeah.
That has lower dimension when you exchange, essentially exchanging the scalar particle. It has the same dimension as a 1 over, I mean, you have to put 1 over the propagator. So it corresponds to k equal minus 1. So that thing is subdominant relative to. If you just want to have that interaction, you just get k to the minus 1. If you have that interaction plus some quartic coupling, the quartic dominance is regime. It's like in the normalization. I'm just saying this only depends on the dimension. So it's the same thing. At high energy, the more non-normalizable interaction dominates. this is what you're seeing here. You go to large dimension of the level trace, which in the global picture in ABS is just the dimension of the two particle state, it's just the energy of the two particle state. And the change in the energy of these two particle states is bigger for the for a non-normalizable interaction. More non-normalizable interaction. Good. I don't want to I think I should try to finish this part.
Okay. The same argument for us yesterday, now if you sum up all errors, this is singularity cannot be removed. There is some means.
No, that's not a problem.
By the same argument.
Yeah, and also in the example, for example, as I told you, we do explicit exchanges. Exchanges always contain all else. Contact interactions, you can bound the L, but in exchanges, you have to sum partial energy and bound the L. And it works perfectly, actually. It's not. The L sum doesn't introduce an extra divergence. Okay, so let me just try to answer some of the questions you already asked about the future. So one question I basically already answered is, so many particle, what about many particle estimated subsets? Can you do that? So I think we can. So this is something I've been thinking about with Takuya. And we've been distracted by the other things, unfortunately. So what we know is in an endpoint function, you have n minus 3 over 2 cross ratios. And you also have the same number of Mendelssohn invariants in an endpoint or an end particle itself. But as you saw here, I mean, the scattering amplitude is really just a non-trivial function of angles. Angles are always ratios of Mendelssohn invariants. So you have to get rid of one. Okay? It has. So you need a condition like z equals z bar that takes a particular limit of the Fortran function. So my best guess for that, I'll tell you, although I mean, this is clearly for the purpose, is this one. If you do this condition for the Fortran function, this is equivalent to z equals z bar. So this sounds good. Good. That's what I mean. Other questions? String theory. Okay? If you want to do string theory, not just supergravity. Okay? That's what you want to do. Same thing. Very, very superficial knowledge. But suppose you do the following. Take the expansion. Okay? Take the expansion in alpha prime. Okay? You have, say, some leading term, and then you have a sum controlled, say, somewhere, okay, again, and some function of the scattering S, okay? Suppose you take this string S matrix and you expand. Now the expansion you can just apply our formula, because now you just have your diagram, you have one diagram which is supergravity, then you have the diagram that comes from the first alpha prime correction to defective action. That has a different coupling constant. It has a different dimension, right? There's a more on alpha prime. So it will have a stronger rho equals zero singularity. So essentially, you already have a similar expansion for A. So you have G, the leading term, which should look like this. And then you have, now you see, you have a sum in alpha prime. It's your parameter. But it has to be dimensionless. So of course you have to divide by R squared. But now you see, R squared, this power of k, k is a very, I'm sorry. figure out or who doesn't have an issue with that. And this, the dimension of the coupling was also fixing the power of the singularity. So if you go there and see, you also have a stronger singularity when you include order by order in the alpha prime space. And of course, now you have some new function of C for each term. And the relation works term by term, okay? I don't need to do more to do, at least perturbatively in alpha prime, relate the S matrix alpha prime correction to the alpha prime corrections of the singularity. And you see that the parameter that you need to keep fixed, to keep all the entire sum, is this parameter, so if you, in terms of the two coupling, is this parameter. So if you wanted to recover the full string theory, you want rho to zero, lambda to infinity, with rho square times the lambda fixed. This is what we know. Right, that's it. This is what we know.
So this would give you all flat space endpoint in principle string theory answers.
So this part I'm still doing two upper prime correction.
You can generalize two.
Two together, yeah.
And so you can say they're finite and sum is summable for a flat space.
Summable, you mean?
Sum of all perturbative S matrix, sum of all perturbative machines.
In principle, yes. There's one assumption hidden behind this, is that you don't have the incorrect divergences in flat space. Because, you see, I'm assuming that when I take the size of the weight packets to infinity, there's no, the S matrix is finite and is just multiplied by the volume. If you have an S matrix with an incorrect divergence, as you take the size of weight packets to be very large, that parameter appears in the inverse. That's the parameter controlling the inverse driver. So you cannot have that. You have to have some infinite finite amplitude in flat space. But that shouldn't be a problem. So I think there's no conceptual obstacle. It's just really doing all the other things.
To have that, you must not master start.
No, you also can. You also regulate through to very more higher dimensions.
Yeah.
In higher dimensions, I mean the. No, sorry. The in string theory, it's just finite order by order.
It's massless steps.
But you also have massless. You should do a one loop scattering. I know. For functions on the torus, and you can compute the scattering up, which is just fine. Anyway, I really want to start the other part. So let me just mention three other extensions, which is external states with spin. That's also something we're thinking about. How does it work? You have to now consider correlation functions of currents or operated with high spin. Another interesting thing is to try to consider massive external particles, because here you always we're taking the dimension of the external operator to be fixed. So if the dimension is fixed and the radius goes to infinity, the mass goes to zero in flat space. So to get the scattering of massive particles, you have to, at the same time you send the radius to infinity, you have to scale the dimension of the operator with the radius.
Yeah, for the continuous answer. Will be one loop representation and you have to see no higher level.
Yeah, I can tell you the reference.
Answer is yes. Your answer is yes.
What did you ask?
if the one loop computation was done, I'll maybe there's an
answer. I think I'm not understanding. Can you speak a bit loud? If the one loop
computation, the second loop was done, and I'll maybe there's an answer.
I think it's not. Do you think it is? I think it's not. But yeah, I
forget what to mention.
Before. No, but
always equal. Before, probably does that matter. The calculation was probably done in 10.
Right. That's my final point. We're just doing the flat space limit in this AVSB plus one. But we know that in the standard example of AVS5 process 5 and 8, they have the same radius. So when you take the flat space limit, you're really going to 10 dimensions. Both things are going up. But here, in this construction, I'm only putting momenta along the AVS direction. There's no momenta. I'm just keeping some zero modes on the S5. So if you want to recover the full 10D Lorentz invariant of the S matrix, you have to understand how to put momenta on the S5 process. And for that, you see, you need R charge very large, because you want to take the flat space limit and keep some finite physical wavelength. So you need an R charge very, very large. So you have to understand the limit of correlation functions with very large R charge. But you see, the beauty of this is that it's totally universal. I mean, you can have many complexifications of type 2B string theory with different internal manifolds, and those are very different field theories. But the flat space limit is always type 2B string theory. So the flat space limit is universal in many, many theories. There are a big variety of field theories that will have the same singularity in this. Okay, I have half an hour to start. I have questions before I do that. So, my plan in this part of the high energy scattering in the SFT is really just to explore this scattering experiments in this regime that we prepare high energy scattering for, but always keeping exact conformal invariant. Okay. So we will just explore really the CFT. How to take this high energy limit in CFT, and then we'll try to understand in n equals 4 superiorian mills, how does the form of the 4-point function in this regime will change from weak to strong as we change the two structure. But before going into that, I wanted to give you a bit of an introduction about what led to this, like from QCD. Because I think it's important because, for example, the word Pomeran is used in several contexts. It's good to have a better idea of what we're talking about. White sparks. So So okay, that's it. Let's just
discuss a bit the motivation how this story started in QCD. So the standard thing in QCD is to consider what's called the classic rendering. You just do high energy scattering in the sense that you have S very large. Okay? S much larger than the momentum transfer and lambda QCD. Okay? Say, but I mean, most of the things, so it's like most of the things that will happen in LHC is a proton-proton scattering, like elastic scattering, at very high energy. So the total cross section will be dominated. So, and what happens here? Let me draw you. Is that essentially the amplitude shows Regi behavior. By that, I mean that the amplitude at large S grows with a power of S that depends on T, okay, on the momentum transfer. So, and moreover, this trajectory is approximately linear. This is experimental phi. Let me just plot here. So the physical scattering regime is for T negative. So what you have is that essentially this thing crosses is more or less linear, and crosses the T equals zero axis slightly above 2. So if you want, I think experimentally, this is something like 1.08. Okay. So this is the observed phenomena, and this dominates total cross section. So the total cross section for this elastic process is simply going like alpha of 0 minus 1. Okay? And so since that intercept is slightly above 1, it grows with a power. So this is the behavior. So this is, well, the reason I'm doing this is because this is what's called the soft form, okay? This type of behavior. And so in the beginning, like even before QCD, people were trying to understand this behavior in terms of Regi theory. And so the idea is that this behavior was the continuation of a line to positive T, where you have hadronic resonance, like physical particles. So for this case, it should be blue holes, because you're doing an elastic scattering process, so you're exchanging essentially you're exchanging the vacuum quantum number. So you need something that doesn't carry any quantum number. Okay, so the idea is that this linear trajectory that you're observing at negative T was the continuation of a rising trajectory of physical blue balls that appear at positive T, right? So this is the mass, this would be the mass square of this part. Sorry, and alpha of T would be the spin of the part. Okay? This is just because you see, if you exchange a particle of spin L, then the amplitude goes like S to the L as large S. So if this exponent here in S is the effective spin of the particle of the region, the particle that corresponds to the sum of the conditions of all these Regi trajectories. Okay. This was the idea. But But this is essentially experimental data. So this, in fact, these dots are quite tricky. So in real PCB, Google mix student methods because they're a finite n. It's complicated to know exactly those things are there from the experimental data. And in, so there's some evidence from lattice. From lattice QCD that those two holes actually lie in this trajectory. But I don't think it's very strong. It's also hard to predict in lattice. So, but what can you do? You can use perturbative QCD, perturbative techniques. You can try to do that. So this is the approach of BFAL. And Lipakov in the 70s. They decided to explore this regime of very large energy in the perturbative expansion of QCD. So they considered the scattering amplitude and they computed perturbative, order by order. So, but since they were at that energy, they did a resummation of the perturbation theory. So they resummed all the terms that were of order alpha strong times log s. Okay. So at each order perturbation theory, they took the large s behavior that for a term of order alpha s to the n, it goes like log s to the n. And they resummed all these. Okay. This is what's called the leading log approximation. Leading log approximation. You see, this is still perturbative, right? Because this is just the leading order. Then you have terms which are alpha strong times the same thing that you can do. Take the subleading behavior of each. This is next. By now, this is also known. A few years later, Lipakov and also Balinski now they computed also the next leading order. So one thing is that if you do this, when you resum this expansion, you get that your amplitude goes like s to the from 0 to 0. You get a slightly stranger behavior than what I was telling you, than what's observed. Sorry. Where this exponent, I call it the zero end, is given by, so this you can compute, 4 pi n alpha strong, well, so n is 3 for this. And if you actually plug in the numbers, This is larger. So for reasonable values of alpha strong, this is larger than much larger than the intercept that you observe over there, which is 1.08. So but I mean it's clear where the problem comes from because what sets the scale. So alpha strong in QCD is a running computation. So the point here is that what sets the scale of alpha strong is the momentum transfer. Okay. So essentially, this alpha strong that you see here is alpha strong of T, or model, if you want. So in the important regime that dominates the total cross section, it's when T is very small. So I mean, T equals zero from. So that means you are deeply into the infrared region, and this coupling is definitely not small. So it doesn't make sense to neglect this. Okay? So really this BFL approach has a limited validity in the regime where S is much bigger than T, but T is also much bigger than lambda T. Okay? So if you want, it controls the line in the negative for very large negative T. But, okay, but this is not all bad. So there are some regimes where this is useful. And those regimes are when, for example, in deep inelastic scattering. So in deep inelastic scattering, you're essentially probing, so you have some high energy electron, then basically this electron just emits a photon, an off-shell photon, that interacts with your photon or whatever target you have. Okay? And then they interact and lots of stuff on top. Okay? So here, this essentially, there's a its photon is emitted and it's off-shell. So it has a spatial momentum q. And essentially this process here interacting with the target is it's q squared that sets the scale of the interaction. So basically you're probing your target with a very small wavelength, so you've seen the small problem. So here alpha strong is set by q squared. Okay? And in deep inelastic scattering, since q squared, you're taking q squared to be much larger than 1 by QCD, so you're really in the perturbative regime. And let me just tell you the usual variables. So if this also comes with momentum p, proton brings momentum p, then, I mean, you want q squared to be small to be perturbative, but you also want to be high energy, otherwise you're not going to get there. So high energy in deep inelastic scattering is usually written in the form, so there's this Bjorken variable x, which is defined by minus q squared over p dot q, which essentially, you see, here you're measuring the total energy of the incoming particle. So this is much smaller than one, means that you are high energy. So high energy, the BFKL approach is very useful to study the small x behavior of the structure functions of the proton in the inelastic scattering. Okay. There's also other processes even cleaner than this, because here you still have a complicated initial wave function for the proton. If you do off-shell, what's called off-shell, so gamma star scattering, which is essentially take out the proton and just have the two off-shell photons interacting and then producing a lot of patterns. Okay? So again here, you see, if you want to know the total cross-section for this process, you just have to, use the optical theorem and the sum over x, over all possible final states, is just given by twice the imaginary part of the four-point function of the scattering amplitude, but just with the four photons, right? So you see, this leads you to exactly what we're going to start to study. We're going to study four-point functions of long-tail operators, but then when you take the imaginary part, then you can compute the total cross-sections in inclusive processes like this. Okay? And again here, you see here, perturbative techniques are also good because So now the connection between VFKL and this, so this is also called the Hart-Pomeroy magnet. Hart because you need a large transfer momentum to suppress to have a small pattern. So the connection between these two is very complicated. It's hard to explore. Because you know what small negative t, but then to cross to the other side, okay, this side you can explore, say, with lattice field theory, lattice cage theory, and get this point. But here in the middle is both strongly coupled and Lorentzian. So that's really what's the hardest thing, and you don't have techniques to explore this region here to know how it cross small t. So if you, the best attempt to explain that was in this paper that actually started this study of ion energy scattering in SEFT by Brouwer, Pulchinski, Strassler, and Kang. They try to use a holographic model to explore how this transmission happens. Okay, so this was the context I wanted to give you. Essentially, so now we're going to focus. So as I think, soft Pomeran is something complicated, non-perturbative, has to be confinement. We're going to go with this hard Pomeran, which is a property which is, can be computed perturbatively. So what we're going to do is to study this process in an exactly conformal field theory. Okay. So now for us, alpha strong is going to be replaced by the Stokes couples, or I say alpha strong times n. It's going to be replaced by Stokes couple, and we're going to study this trajectory as a function of lambda, both at weak and at strong couple. And okay, I think this is something we shall see that we start with the BFKL Pomeran at weak coupling with this effective spin of 1 plus a correction of lambda. And then as lambda increases, we will move to J equals 2. And we will end up in the Graviton exchange of strong coupling. Okay? So if you want this Pomeran, this hard Pomeran, in string theory, is really the regi trajectory of the graviton. When you sum the full regi trajectory that starts with the graviton and then includes massive excited streams of the leading twists, then the effect of all of that is the Pomeran, which a strong coupling is just the graviton because all the other excited streams do not contribute. As their mass starts to be smaller, they start to change the form of the amplitude. And at really a quick coupling, it then ends up in this spin one EFKL form. Okay, so now let me just. I think I can. I just wanted to give you a basic. Basic kinematics, so that tomorrow we start with dynamics.
The Pomeran thing, in different quantum numbers, the hard Pomeran?
They are both vacuum extensions. No, hey, we still believe that there's a continuation. I'm just saying that to see this continuation to the real soft Pomeran, to this effect in real QCD, it's really a highly, so it involves confinement effects, because you start to see Hadron masses, and it's also very Lorentzian, so you cannot study this in lattice QCD. So, but I'm not saying that they are not connected. I'm just saying that the connection is hard. So we're going to go to a theory where we just study the problem of high energy scattering without the problem of random coupling and without the problem of complicated new functions from the incoming part. We're just going to focus on a particular part of the problem. Yes?
Whenever you have a perturbative description, this J, then the data set is the spin of the elementary particle that's been exchanged, one for gluon, two for
particle. One for Pomeran, please. It's two gluons. It's a single state of two gluons. We'll see that. It's not just a gluon exchange, one gluon exchange, because a gluon carries color. It has to be a single state.
If your theory would not have a gluon but spin half particle, it wouldn't be half.
No, but again, in this case, it has to be quantum numbers of a vacuum. You cannot. Not exchange a spin of
depending on this. It's always the elementary excitation we have.
Now, the problem in QCD is that you have, this is not elementary excitation. So you have all these Hadron resonances with unbounded speed.
We need to answer the question.
No,
yeah.
Because you see in QCD, even in both four supreme groups, I'm telling you that you just have fluons and, you know, and the supersymmetric partners with less fluids and scalars and fermions, and you go from one to two. So
in fact, two, you don't, you are not in perturbative expansion around if we give you your elementary particle spin one. You're in perturbative expansion around elementary particle in spin two.
I mean in a perturbative expansion. But still, I just told you the one that is there at lambda equals zero is not the spin of the gluon. Okay, let me then set up just the kinematics so that tomorrow we start with dynamics. So how are we going to set up the Ressi kinematics in a CFT? The Ressi kinematics in a CFT. So first of all, since you are in a CFT, it's better to. I mean, it doesn't make sense to be considering scattering in terms of in and out state. So what you want to compute is correlation functions in position space. So we'll formulate the Ressi limit in terms of position in correlation functions in position space, like the one we've seen. So let's go here. Okay, precisely this one. We also call it A. So what's the idea? The idea is it's physically very simple. If you want S, so S goes to infinity and T is fixed. So essentially what you want in terms of position space is that you have particle, the point y1 to go. So that you have point y1 and y3 to become very null related along the y plus axis, say for example. So y3 point, y3, y2. You see? So in equation, what I mean is y1 plus goes to minus infinity, y3 plus goes to plus infinity, y2 minus goes to minus infinity, and y4 minus goes to plus infinity. And at the same time, you should keep fixed all the yi squares and also the yy transverse squares fixed. So what you're doing in a high energy scattering experiment is really selecting a scattering plane, which I'm parameterizing by light field coordinates y minus and y plus. Okay. So if you have your four-dimensional Minkowski space, you're writing this as an M2 factor. This is a scattering plane with y plus and y minus times a transverse space R2. This is like the impact parameter space when you split the particles in the transverse direction. But now I have now let's look at this configuration, at this kinematics in ADS. So in the boundary of ADS. This is a configuration of boundary points. Let's look at it in the boundary of ADS. So I try to represent it here because it was a hard picture to draw. Okay. So over in this orange square, you see the original that M2 plane, the conformal complexification of that Minkowski plane. Okay. And so the points are essentially approaching no infinity in this limit. Okay? So what I want to do, so if you look at this figure, now you put this Minkowski plane in the boundary of ABS. Okay? As we know, this only covers the boundary of one concurrent patch. Okay? So I know if the figure is clear, I think you can see. So I put it in the front and I fold it over, and so this point here at infinity, I0, is this point back here, I0. And the center of ABS, the origin of our Minkowski space, is this point here in the front. But now what's happening, you see, when you take this limit, the points are going to be null infinity. But in terms of ABS, it's much nicer. They are just approaching these two points in the north and south pole of the sphere, and the same thing here, north and south pole of the sphere. So what's convenient to do is to change coordinates. So you describe each of these points that is approaching this null infinity usual in the original physical patch as a point approaching the origin in this other Poincaré patch, which I call P1. You see, the point 1 is approaching the origin of the Poincaré patch, P1. And I describe each of the points as approaching the origin of a different Poincaré patch. Okay? So you see, these two blue lines, you glue them together when you make really the boundary of ABS. And so you see, these big dots are the origin of each of these Poincaré patches that fold like this in ABS. You see, this is an allowed thing because I can always, I just need to describe a four-point function or a correlation function in a conformal field theory. I just need to have a patch with a metric around the operator. Then I can glue different patches together to make the full correlator. So. So the conformal transformation that takes you from one patch to the other is very simple. You just take xi written in, the plus, minus, and transverse coordinates, and you write it as, and you do this conformal transformation. So this is for I equal 1 and 3. Let me color. For 2 and 4, you just put a minus here. Okay. So this is, you can just check that this is a conformal transformation. This leaves a metric dy. It just changes the metric up to a scalar factor in front. Okay. And now, as I said, the Regi limit, it's much simpler to formulate. It just means all the xi is going to 0. They are approaching this particular point in the sphere. So of course you can recover, I don't even need to write that. You can recover now the original physical amplitude just by doing the conformal transformation, right? This A of yi can be recovered just by the transformation from doing the conformal transformation of the operator. Okay. Product of I of the conformal transformation of the operator.
of the correlation function computed with the subsets xi. So why am I telling you this? Because this is really, I mean, when you use these coordinates, really things simplify a lot. How much time do I have?
Zero.
5 minutes.
3 minutes later, so.
Can I have 5 minutes just to finish this part of the kinematics? Or? Let me very quickly explain the. So okay, so why is this good? Because now the conformal transformations act much more simply in the industry. We should use this variable. So in particular, let me just list. If you do a translation in the Poincaré patch P1, so the important thing that you have to have in mind is that look at this Poincaré patch P1. X1 is approaching the origin. X2 is approaching spatial infinity of Poincaré patch P1. So if you do a translation in Poincaré patch P1, that is going to be a special conformal transformation for X2. If you do a dilatation at X1, X2 will feel the inverse dilatation. Okay? So let me write that. So if you do a translation at point P1, the points 2 and 4, so 1 and 3 transform are in the same way because they are Poincaré patches, I mean, they are just the next Poincaré patch, but in the same sequence, if you want to cover the area. So here, this should be a special conformal transformation. But remember, I want to be in the Rezé limit. So I want to consider transformations whose parameter is of order xi, which is very small. So this is, in fact, invariant up to order a squared, or xi, and xi squared, okay? So this transformation leaves this point invariant. Now you can do, if you do a special conformal transformation in this patch, it's the opposite, right? You have this thing is invariant, plus zero, and this thing goes plus b, okay? There's a new transformation that leaves this one invariant and shifts that one. So you see, it's natural to define coordinates. Let me introduce coordinates x1, x equals x1 minus x2. This will be invariant and they're both the transformation. And let me introduce x bar equals x2 minus x4. This will be invariant and they're both the transformation. Now you still have more transformations. You have, no, I'm counting here transformations in the Poincaré path P1. So suppose you have a dilatation in the Poincaré patch P1. As I said, dilatations will transform the points 1 and 3. So points 1 and 3 will scale with lambda, and the points 2 and 4 will scale with the opposite because they are the point at infinity. Okay? And then you have Lorentz transformations. This is all transformed the same. So essentially, you've got just a rotation. If you rotate around zero, it's like rotating around infinity, choosing the right signs. So essentially, there's a rotation lambda zero. So it's very easy to write the invariants now. The conformal invariants in this limit, you see, you have x and x bar. Now they scale differently, so you have to have x and x bar together. So you can do that by taking x squared, x bar squared, or x of x bar. Okay. So Lorentz invariance plus this scaling symmetry fixes, you only have these two invariants. Okay. So let me, to relate what I said before, this invariant is just sigma squared, and this invariant you can also, let me define it slightly better, like this, is cosh rho squared. Okay. And again, the Rezi limit, it's even simpler now. It's sigma to zero, rho fixed. And now if you want to be sure that what you're doing is right, you can really use the original limit in the y's, put it here in the cross ratios, and using the relation that I showed you before between z's and z-bars and sigma and rho, you get precisely you get a relation. What I'm saying is that instead of using z-bar, it's much more convenient to use x and x-bar. Okay, and now let me just show you this picture and that's it. So we saw the phase space limit was this limit, was rho to zero with sigma x, and sigma was the scattering angle. Sigma was sine squared theta over 2 equals minus t over s. So now what I'm saying is that the Rezi limit is sigma to 0 with rho fixed. So you see there's an intersection. So sigma to 0 is this region around the origin. With rho fixed, you can explore, and moving in complex rho, you can explore the neighborhood of the origin. So now you see that's an intersection, and it's perfectly consistent. You see that if you take both to zero, you just get the Rezi limit in flat space, s becoming very large, and so the scattering angle becoming small. Okay. So this region here is flat space and Rezi limit. But you can also take a Rezi limit still in ABS, still keeping the curvature in ABS and doing higher limit scattering. Okay. So that's what I wanted to tell you. This tomorrow we'll go on exploring now that I told you the kinematics, we'll go on exploring the dynamics and try to see what happened at strong and that weak coupling for this four-point function in this way. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Sorry. Is this breaking numbers? I mean, t is in the flat space, t is going to zero, or
t is fixed. T is fixed and x is y. That's the classical regular number.
So it's the size of t then is governed. So if you're saying the ratio of flat space, so sigma and rho are going to zero.
Yeah.
And the ratio is fixed.
But no, because you lose all parameters. There's no non-trivial parameter. Right? If you just take the scattering amplitude, generically, it's a non-trivial function of the angle. But now if you take the Rezi limit on top of that, you just have some really behavior with the angle. So there's no non-trivial parameter that you lose.
Okay, so if there are no further questions, let's thank Claudia.